Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Can you imagine those words? The president has been taken hostage. Well, that is in Joel Rosenberg's brand new book, The First Hostage. It's fiction, but he talks about the Middle East and things that are going on. It's almost like fiction, faction type stuff. And it is amazing when you start, you know, reading about the Middle East. It's almost, you get so educated on some facts, even though it's not actual thing that's taking place. And as a matter of fact, we want to go to this right now. You got to get this book and begin to just, there's something about Joel, what he knows about the Middle East, what he knows about Israel, and it's just very enlightening. It helps us to be informed. And by the way, he's going to talk about how it kind of, you can't tell how it ends, but imagine that. Let's just take a look now. This is Joel.
The First Hostage, a new novel from New York Times bestselling author Joel C. Rosenberg. The president is missing, and the unthinkable becomes reality. The result is a global high alert, a constitutional crisis in the U.S., and the world brought to the brink of catastrophe. The First Hostage, from Joel C. Rosenberg, another adrenaline-charged political thriller snatched from today's headlines.
Well, Joel Rosenberg's here with us. He's a Middle East expert, best-selling author, and the latest book is a fascinating read. It's called The First Hostage. I read it through cover to cover and to try to figure out how it finally ended. And it did end well, thank the Lord, because we wouldn't want our president to be murdered. Anyhow, Joel, it's a good read. Now, this is the second in a series.
That's right. The first was called The Third Target.
Yeah.
It's about a New York Times foreign correspondent who hears a rumor that ISIS, the Islamic State, yeah, has captured chemical weapons in Syria and is planning a genocidal attack, as well as it turns out, the reporter finds himself uncovering a plot to capture and potentially behead the president of the United States.
All right.
Let's pray it never happens.
Well, you don't want to tell anymore because it's fiction and people want to be able to read this. Unfortunately, with a book like this, I can't tell too much about what's in it or I'll give away the story, but it's a good story. You focused in on Syria. How come?
Syria is in a total meltdown.
Yeah.
We're watching the implosion of a modern Arab state and an absolute human catastrophe. The state of the Middle East right now is a catastrophe. President Obama's policies in the Middle East have been an utter failure because he has chosen ideologically to withdraw all U.S. forces and influence from the region. Now, there are some forces he sent back because the region is on fire. And so I decided, if you look at the goals, the stated goals of the Islamic State, and you say, what if they began to come true? What if their version of history began to play out? What would that look like in its worst case scenario? That's what this series is about.
Well, you know, the whole thing, you've got the Sunnis and the Shias. Now they've decided they're going to start fighting. I noticed Pakistan came in yesterday. I was in Pakistan, met with the president over there some years ago, and they then had their capital was named Faisalabad. You remember, after King Faisal, Faisalabad. And then they've changed it back to Islamabad.
Right.
But they were really sucking up to the Saudis because they wanted their money. But now they've come in very strong on the side of Saudi Arabia against Iran. They said, we will obliterate Iran if they come after our buddies, the Saudis. What do you make of all that?
Well, that's right. What you've got is a huge split. But it's not just Shia and Sunni. It is. It's also Sunni Arab against the Islamic State, which is Sunni.
Yeah.
Why? Because the leaders of Iran and the leaders of the Islamic State are not just radical Islam. This is what I call apocalyptic Islam. Both the leaders of both movements, Iran and ISIS, believe that the end of days has come, that their Islamic Messiah, known as the Mahdi, is coming at any moment, and that they need to commit genocide in order to create the caliphate, this global Islamic kingdom. Now, the Saudis feel threatened. The Jordanians feel threatened. The Egyptians, the Gulf Sunni Arab Emirates. Well, what's our president doing? Not my fictional president in First Hostage. The president of the United States today is refusing to meet with Jordan's King Abdullah, who's in Washington this week. He's too busy. Too busy for our most faithful Sunni Arab ally. The Saudis feel like the president of the United States is cut and run. The Jordanians feel this way. The Egyptians, the Israelis have the worst relationship with this president in the history of the country. So the region feels scared by two existential threats, Iran and ISIS and this apocalyptic Islam.
You know, in that Mahdi thing, the 12th Imam, the whole idea of the Iranians, and you remember when the head of Iran made that statement in front of the United Nations, right. He said he could feel the presence of this being. But they feel that he's alive and that there has to be a disaster in the world, and then he will come and fix it.
That's right.
But the Sunnis the don't believe in it. Do they believe in the Mahdi at all? Or?
They do. They believe in the Mahdi. They don't believe that the Mahdi, their Messiah, is the 12th Imam. That's a Shia spin on it. That, you know, because the split originally from are Muslims following the family of Muhammad after Muhammad's death? That's the Shias, or the disciples of Muhammad? That's the Sunnis. Coming back to the Pakistanis, the Saudis are talking openly about buying nuclear weapons from the PACs. Why? Because they fear that the President Obama has given Iran's apocalyptic Muslims two pathways to nuclear weapons in 2015. One, if Iran cheats on the deal, but the other, if the Iranians keep the deal and in 10 years, the restrictions are all removed and Iran can build as many nuclear weapons as possible. This has been a catastrophic year in U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. If the President of the United States comes out tonight and says the State of the Union is strong and the state of our foreign policy is strong, nobody in the region, much less in the country, I think, believes this.
Well, you know, it's amazing.
We've got one more year to go, and it's a little scary.
Well, even here domestically, if somebody comes, that guy that shot that policeman, you know, the mayor said, I'm not about to call this anything about Islamic terror. Well, the man was talking about Allah Akbar. I mean, he's, you know.
He vowed allegiance to the Islamic State.
And yet the mayor said, no, I'm not going to do that. And the president will not name it. What's wrong with him?
You cannot defeat an enemy that you refuse to define.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that the president still won't call radical Islam by its name, but apocalyptic Islam is much worse. Mm-hmm. Why? Because radical Islam wants to attack us, to drive us out of the holy lands and the holy places. But apocalyptic Islam doesn't simply want to attack us. It wants to annihilate us and bring about genocide in order to usher in the coming of their Messiah. The novel, The Third Target, and now The First Hostage, takes you through the eyes of a reporter inside this story to understand what might happen, worst case scenarios, if our leaders don't understand the threats that we face. The president doesn't understand it, but I'm also concerned that the two front runners in the presidential campaign, Secretary Clinton and Mr. Trump, neither of them understand apocalyptic Islam or are prepared to deal with it.
It's too spiritual, it's too complicated for them to grasp, don't you think?
I don't think so, but I think there's a willing blindness, a refusal to consider, like the mayor of Philadelphia. The guy must be a smart person, but to choose not to study and understand the intent of your enemy, even if you think the ideology or the religion is crazy, you still have to understand your enemy, lest you be blindsided by an evil you don't understand and aren't prepared for. That's the theme of these novels.
This apocalyptic thing is, and the Iranians, at least Ahmadinejad was saying that if we lose half of our population, so what? We'll destroy Israel, we'll wipe them off the map, and then the Mahdi will come anyhow. So they don't mind sacrificing millions of people.
That's right. That's the difference. You know, to have an eschatology, a belief that the Messiah is coming, that he's bringing a kingdom, I believe this, you believe this.
Sure.
Christians, Orthodox Christians believe that Christ is coming to set up a kingdom. The difference with apocalyptic Islam is they want genocide. They believe that you have to destroy all of Israel, all the Jews, and all of the United States and all of Christendom, and then their Messiah will come. Mm-hmm. This genocidal objective is horrific. And, and again, one of the themes of these novels is to misunderstand the nature and threat of evil is to risk being blindsided by it.
Well, that's the frightening thing is Can you name many people in our government in higher positions who share your point of view or our point of view about apocalyptic Islam?
I've been working my way through the presidential candidates.
Yeah.
I've been spending time with them. I'm meeting with them, emailing them, because this is significantly and substantively different. Radical Islam is still a threat. This is Al-Qaeda. This is Hamas, the Taliban, the Muslim Brotherhood. But we are in the first moment in human history, Pat, where not just one nation state, but two, Iran and the Islamic State, their leaders are driven by ancient Islamic prophecies that require genocide to bring them about. This is the photographic opposite, photographic negative of biblical eschatology, where Jesus says, this gospel of the kingdom, this good news, shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end shall come. In other words, our mission is to try to save the entire world by preaching the gospel in the power of the Holy Spirit and giving people a chance to choose, whereas their vision of the end is kill every infidel, and then the Messiah comes. This is so dangerous. And it's doubly dangerous when you have a president, a national security system, and front runners to replace him who neither understand it, don't care, aren't studying it.
Joel, I hope this book, and I know it'll go well. It's a great read, ladies and gentlemen, called The First Hostage. And it's now number 13 publishers. It may go to number one. It's a great book. And if you, I mean, it'll be a fast read for you if you really enjoy it. And poor Terry didn't get any sleep last night because she was up reading. I was watching football, but she was reading. I'd already read your book. So.
Thank you, Joel.
Joel, thanks for being. It's called The First Hostage, Joel Rosenberg. Thanks, buddy.
Great to be
God
with
bless you.
Thank you,
Pat. Thank you.
You think about it, this is definitely a read. This is somebody who, I guess this is the kind of how society is today. You can't tell them this is a factual thing because people don't want to hear just some linear explanation of things going on. So you've got to make it seem entertaining. Well, you can learn so much from Joel's book. Make sure you get it. It's The First Hostage. I got it myself, and I began to read it. It's just amazing. Those first words kind of shock you. Well, imagine, look at all the things we're doing on the internet. Banking, we're doing finances, we're doing shopping, we're doing all these things on the internet today. But when we get back from this break, I'm going to talk to you about something pretty dramatic. You know what it is? This is the year they're going to give the internet away. American government will no longer be over the internet, according to what we are hearing.
You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFNTV and the Daily Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light.